Hello, and welcome to another episode of What Makes You Click. I'm your host, Kelvin Bullock. And on today's episode, I'll be chatting with a photographer who really has a unique way of capturing his subject matter, whether that be in his fine art or commercial work. And we're really going to dive into what it looks like to chip away at that process and really hone in on your own style and aesthetic. So stay tuned for that. It's a very enlightening conversation. So without further ado, let's take a listen to hear what makes Mr. John Keatley click. John, hey, man, I appreciate you for hopping on this call and agreeing to have this conversation with me, man.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And when I think about how I first became aware of your work and just you as an artist, I can't remember if it was through your uniform series or through Creative Live, because I know that you did a series on Creative Live for like commercial photographers. So I can't remember which one that I became aware of you from, but I just know that once I was aware of you, it became like super clear that this guy knows what he's doing and he knows how to get his point across through the camera. And we're going to talk about that a little bit today. But before we do, let me just go back to, and I believe I saw that you are originally from Santa Barbara, California. Is that correct? I know the internet can sometimes give misinformation.
I was born there. Yeah, I lived there. I only lived there about 7 years. And then we moved to Northern California. But yeah, that's where I'm from.
Yeah. So how did your family even find themselves in Santa Barbara to begin with?
My family is from Southern California. So like my mom and my dad both grew up in Sherman Oaks, south side of LA. And my mom's family relocated to LA from Buffalo, New York, before my mom was born. So my mom and my dad were born there, and then they got married and they moved to Santa Barbara. My dad had a job there, and that's where I was born. And then I think they decided they wanted like a simpler life. They moved to a very small town in Northern California.
Okay. And so what kind of work did your parents do?
Well, my mom, she was a nutritionist. She didn't work once I was born. And my dad was a pastor. So I'm a pastor's kid. And yeah. Well, that obviously, that is a big influence on who I am. And I think my work especially. But that's what my dad did. And so he had a church in Santa Barbara and then took a new job at a church up in Northern California. So that's why we moved up there. So
yeah. Once you guys moved, or even before that, when you were a kid, what kind of things did you find yourself interested in? Were there particular activities or even arts and crafts that you gravitated towards?
Yeah. Yeah. I always loved crafts or just creating. I would say, I think crafts, especially because of like Sunday school and stuff. But I remember my grandma bought my sister this like a kit for paper cutting. Like, it's like, you know, you cut little silhouettes out of paper and stuff. And my sister didn't really like love it, but I actually started doing it. And I don't remember, I might've been like 8 or 9 when I started, but I started doing those and I actually sold a bunch of them. That was my first business, I suppose, technically, was selling paper cuttings. And I did that for, I don't know, a few years, I guess. But my mom, just a couple of years ago, gave me this letter that I had no memory of from, I think it was my first grade teacher. I think she wrote it, maybe it would have been in Santa Barbara. I think, I don't know if she wrote it because we were moving or if it was just a nice, just because, but she wrote this really beautiful letter and it said, John, you are an artist. I don't remember exactly. I wouldn't be doing justice. It was a really nice letter, but basically said like, don't ever forget you are an artist. You have such an interesting perspective. It was really interesting to hear that in my 30s, because on one hand, like if I had not gotten into art, if I'd taken some job that I didn't love, but you know, that's obviously always inside all of us. I think, you know, creativity, I think some of us just kind of get away from it. You know, we're told we have to color inside the lines or, you know, life goes on, life changes. And, you know, but I don't know how I would have handled that letter if I had walked away from creativity, because that letter would have been like a huge slap in the face of what could have been, you know?
Yeah.
But to receive it now and be in a place where I'm creating all the time, it was really affirming, and it felt really wonderful that someone would have taken the time to say that to a, you know, 6 or 7 year old or something. It was really powerful. So yeah, I don't remember all the little things that I did, but I've always loved creating. And it's, I think, something that my parents encouraged. I played music. I didn't ever love it, but I was forced to play music, and then for quite a while.
Sorry. What instrument or instruments?
Yeah, I played the saxophone. Gosh, I don't remember when I started playing, but I played the saxophone all the way through high school. And then in high school, I started learning the bass. So I played bass for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years or something like that. And then I gave that up kind of around when I discovered photography. Music was always, I love music. I mean, we have music playing constantly in our house, but I don't love playing music. I love listening to it and feeling it. And yeah, it was like a really love, hate, stressful relationship with music for a long time, because I felt like I had to play it. I felt like I was supposed to be good, or, you know, I needed to play it. Finally, when I realized like there's a different way to love music, it was really freeing. So,
well, I'm curious then. I love that a lot of creatives are creative in multiple ways. And with you first having music as one of the ways that you creatively expressed yourself, what was that, I guess, driving force or that influence that made you feel like you had to be good at it? Because you just said you felt like you had to be good at it. Was it pressure from your parents or those around you? What drove that?
Oh boy. I mean, I think that's just that's kind of who I am. Like if I do something, I'm going to try to be the greatest at it, like no matter what it is. Like I could get into like where that comes from. I think the older I get, the more I realize, you know, I'm sure there's reasons or influences that maybe facilitated some of that, but I also think that's just who I am to some extent. So, you know, yeah, I don't know. I think there's definitely was pressure growing up with your dad being a pastor. People are always watching you. You always have to be on your best behavior. There was a lot of like, so-and-so saw you today and reported back what you were doing. And, you know, good job if it was good, if it was sketchy, like that's a terrifying way to live or to grow up, you know, having to make sure you make the right decisions because it reflects on your parents and all that kind of stuff. So I think there's probably some of that at play, but I also think like, the older I get, the more I realize I don't want to blame my parents for everything, you know, but yeah, that's just kind of my mentality with things, I think.
Well, you know, I can totally relate to that feeling of, you know, wanting to be, you know, spot on and presentable and perfect for your parents and those around you. My dad growing up was a police officer. He still is, actually. And, you know, he had his eyes and ears everywhere. So it would be the same thing where it would get back to him something that I did. And I'm like, oh, man. So, you know, let me stay on the straight and narrow. So I totally get that. And so at what point then did you find yourself getting interested into photography? Because you said once you found photography, the music kind of fell away. But at what point did that really happen in your childhood?
Well, I mean, that's not true. I guess in high school, I did take a photography class and we, you know, developed our film in the dark room and all that kind of stuff and made prints. And I really enjoyed it. I mean, I remember, you know, we had assignments where you're doing like perspective and, you know, I learned a lot, but it was like, I never thought about it other than it was a really fun class. Like I had fun, but I never thought outside of the classroom, like this had any real reach anywhere else, you know? And so beyond that, you know, my dad was interested in photography. His dad was also, they had good cameras, like good Canon film cameras. And so I think I grew up seeing better than average family pictures, you know? And I mean, by no means was he shooting a lot, but just like what pictures we had, they were in focus and they were interesting and, you know, the backgrounds were blurred kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think I grew up with that, but then in college, I was just like, I was on my own. I was having a good time and I just felt like I wanted to have some memories to show that I had a life in college. I don't know what my motivation was, but I was like, I should show, take pictures, you know, hang out with my cool friends or whatever. So I got my grandpa's old film camera because my grandpa had passed. And so the camera was just sitting around. And so I asked if I could have it. And I took some pictures, and it, again, really was just for memory's sake. There was nothing. Although I was like, you know, trying to take, if we went out to dinner, I would take pictures through the glasses on the table or something, you know, I would, I suppose to that extent, but
yeah.
And, you know, some friends and I, we broke into a golf course late at night and we like rode longboards down this like steep hill and we took pictures of that kind of stuff. So I just was doing that kind of thing. And then I went back to California during some break, Christmas break probably, and told my parents that I had been taking pictures, and they even were freaked out because, you know, I was going to a private school and it was expensive and we certainly didn't have a lot of money. To this day, don't even fully know how I was able to go there, but they were like, you can't be spending money on film and developing. So I couldn't disagree. I mean, I worked a lot through high school and college. Like I saved a lot of money. That's partly how I went. I had to pay my own way. So I worked a lot, but I know my parents were definitely helping out and probably my grandparents. And so like, we really probably didn't have like 10, 15 extra dollars to spend on film and developing and stuff. So I took my last roll of film that I had already shot in to get developed at like at Long's Drugs, which is, you know, like a CVS or Bartels or whatever, depending on where you live. And I dropped the film off and then you have to go back like the next day by noon to pick up the prints or whatnot. And I was always like, I have no patience. So I'd always go back in like early, like 9 or 10 in the morning. Maybe there's a chance they'll be done by then. And when I got to the counter, there was a girl working there and she said, are you John Keatley? And that got my, you know, my senses up a little bit because I had a bit of a guilty conscience and I was a bit of a troublemaker. And so I immediately started thinking like, you know, should I run? Like, what's this about? And she went and got the manager who wanted to speak to me, which, you know, didn't sound promising. And the manager came out, her name was Colleen Potter, and she had a packet of prints in her hand. And she said, did you take these? And again, I'm like, you know, don't admit to anything, you know? And so I said, show me the pictures first. She went through them with me and, you know, just went through the pictures and talked to me as she was looking at them. And it was a very confusing experience. I didn't understand why we needed to have this conversation. And she said, you know, have you ever considered being a photographer? And that was just like such, I didn't even know what that meant. I mean, we had, you know, in the town that I grew up in, it's like a town of 5,000. There was a newspaper there called the Record Bee. And I had seen someone, you know, at our track meets taking pictures occasionally and things like that. But I'm pretty sure, I mean, I don't know for sure, but it seemed like he was probably the photographer and the publisher and the editor, you know, like it was a very small kind of thing. Like never in my wildest dreams had I ever thought that like there were photographers in the world. You know, I just wasn't even aware of it. So what was intriguing about what she said to me though, was I was in college at the time, I was studying business and I had been desperately looking for something that I could run on my own or be in charge. I want to be in charge of my own destiny. And this was something that I had enjoyed. I hadn't thought a lot about it, but I enjoyed it. And then there was someone telling me that like I could actually make a living doing it and that I was maybe good at it. And so that was all I needed to hear. I just went home, you know, 24 hours after my parents told me I can't afford to take pictures anymore and announced I'm going to be a photographer, professional photographer. So that was it, you know, like it was her kindness and, you know, just whatever it was that caused her to take a moment out of her day to tell some kid who knew nothing about photography that they should, you know, think about being a photographer.
I love hearing stories like that because it's almost like she was like an angel sent down to put you on the right path. You know what I'm saying? Because
yeah, no, I believe. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's like so many different things could have happened to you had that one conversation not happened. So it's almost like you won the lottery by her, you know, deciding to, you know, first of all, say to the young lady working at the desk, like, hey, when John Keatley comes in, come get me because I need to talk to this guy. I just love, you know, hearing things like that. And you said a couple of other things that I wanted to kind of go back and touch on very briefly before we move forward just a little bit, because you said that you guys broke into a country club and are on a golf course. So that's kind of funny. It kind of reminds me of some of the preacher kids that I knew growing up because they always tended to have a little bit of that, you know, a little bit of that trouble streak in them. And it was the same with cops kids. So we were all kind of on the same accord with that. But that's kind of funny to me. That was the case. But in addition to that, you said that you ended up going to college and you were majoring in business admin, and that was at Seattle Pacific University, correct?
Right, yeah.
And so you were back when you were like a senior in high school or whatever, it was at that point where, or was it at that point when you started to have that feeling of, I want to have something for myself. I want to be my own business person. Is that when those feelings started to arise, or when did that even become a thing for you? Because creatives, they're not always necessarily on that same path, but it sounds like you had a very interesting mindset about that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think it was always, I always had a bit of an entrepreneurial spirit. I think also my parents did a great job in like just forcing me to work, you know, like when I was young, they made me go out and mow lawns. You know, I mowed, you know, all the neighbor lawns for like 10 bucks a pop or whatever it was. And, you know, in the summers we lived on a lot of property. We didn't own it, but we lived in an area where there was a lot of property. So like I would go out and pick blackberries like all day and then sell blackberries. So I probably did that when I was, you know, from the age of like 9 to 14 or 15 or something like that. So I remember that feeling of, you know, picking blackberries and then, you know, giving someone a basket of berries and receiving a dollar, you know, or mowing a lawn and getting 10 bucks. Like that was, you know, that was a big deal. And it made an impression on me when I was young. And then, you know, when I was in high school, I had, for a small town, I had what was probably one of the better jobs you could get for my age. Especially there was one computer repair shop, and this is when computers were kind of just starting to kind of become a, you know, a more common thing. And so I think I got paid like $15 an hour to build and repair computers. And so that's part of what got me into, you know, I initially went to school to study computer science and I hated that. So I switched to business, but you know, I've always worked hard and I've always like had those opportunities around me. So I think those things, but you know, to answer your question, I don't know that I don't know at what point in my life I was like thinking about adult type things, you know, like I enjoyed that when I was a kid. I probably, if I had to guess, it was probably when I got to school and people start asking you, what are you going to do when you grow up kind of thing? Or what are you going to do now that you're in college? And it felt
what are you
like
going to major
lot,
in?
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of pressure like, oh, are we doing this? Like, do I need to make some sort of decision now? You know? So I think that was probably where the pressure was coming from.
Yeah, no, that's all very interesting to me. And I'm seeing a lot of recurring themes with you from an early age, getting a taste of that entrepreneurial journey, from the selling the paper cutouts to the blackberries to, you know, even the job with at the computer store. It's interesting to see how that just kept coming up. And so now moving back to the point where you said that, okay, mom and dad, I'm going to be a photographer. How was that received?
I don't know. I probably didn't give them a lot of space to, I mean, whatever they said, I wasn't paying attention because I had made up my mind at that point. So, and I've always had, I mean, I always come up with ideas, and especially when you're young, you know, my parents, I think still to this day think that I like go through ideas like, you know, like water. But I think when you're younger, you try things out, or at least I did. I tried stuff out and a lot of it didn't stick, and sometimes something did. So I'm sure they thought this photography thing was just maybe one of those things, but there was nothing else from that moment on. And there never has been ever since. So that was it. Like that was what I sunk my teeth into.
Yeah. And so did you actually go through with getting your business administration degree, or did you switch over, or was it like, I'm going to finish in this, but once I graduate, I'm pursuing photography?
No, I just went straight to photography. And, you know, I don't even know how I graduated, to be honest with you. I kind of skated by, but I mean, I went to my classes and I probably did the bare minimum to pass. And even then, like it took me, as a whole nother story, it took me a long time to graduate. I went back and just immediately started like looking for anything photography related. You know, there was like a couple blogs, I think. You know, there was like a magazine or two that I was aware of. And there was one guy at my college who was a wedding photographer, and he worked like for a studio. And so I tried to meet him, and eventually a friend and I, we went down and we got jobs as assistants, like at a wedding photography studio. So I started doing that, which was awesome because they gave us free film and free developing, like for on our own, just to practice. So we would drive downtown every week and just like load up a bag of film, and it was amazing. That was probably more exciting than, you know, getting paid. And then let's see, I also kind of forced myself into a photo shoot for the college once, which, you know, if someone did it to me, I would have been furious. But a friend of mine was being photographed by some professional photographer, and she mentioned it. And so I just showed up at the shoot. The photographer was really gracious and generous. And he ended up talking to me quite a bit. They had to drive downtown and he let me ride with him. And so I just just asked questions nonstop and kind of watched. And then actually the college started to hire me just to do, things around school. I think they liked the idea of like a student's perspective, as opposed to bringing someone in from LA who doesn't necessarily have a connection to the school. So I started just shooting events and things like that or whatever. And actually shot for the school for several years, even after I graduated. So that was my first client. And then I had an acquaintance who I grew up with, actually my friend who I grew up with, his older brother was an art director for a small Christian magazine called Colorado. And so I wrote him, and then he didn't hire me, but another magazine under that umbrella started hiring me, and I shot for them while I was still in college. So I just was kind of like a parasite. I just attached myself to anything I could find, I wanted to shoot. I was assisting at that wedding studio, and I wanted to be a photographer there, not just an assistant. And I kept bugging them, and they promised like in 6 months they would let me do it. And then 6 months came along and they said I wasn't ready yet. And I was just so angry. And so I quit, and they're like, good luck. And that was right around the time of digital SLRs. And so, I was like, hey, that's works for me. Like, I didn't have any firm attachment to film. There was a lot of pushback. I remember in the community, people were like, I've been doing this. I'm not going to switch over to these stupid digital cameras. And in hindsight, I get it. They probably weren't that great of quality, but I bought one. And then one of the perks of going to a small private Christian college is, for whatever reason, white Christian kids tend to get married super young. So there was a lot of weddings going on, And so I started getting hired by people. A lot of the people I knew, but some people I didn't know, is a small community. So like, oh, John shoots weddings. And so I had a business going before I even graduated. And it was the kind of thing where I was just like, I remember getting to the end of my final year and everyone was like, what are you going to do for work? And I was like, I've just got like a couple more weddings I need to do, and then I'm going to look for a job. And that just never happened. It just, kept going. So.
Interesting. Again, that theme of you just going out and being a go-getter just continues to pop up. And I guess a question that I have in regards to some of the subject matter that you were shooting, aside from some of the assignments you had for school and some of the weddings, were there any other types of work or personal projects that you were doing that was more of just the things that you were interested in?
I mean, not really. I mean, I started doing this when I was in high school. I think when I was working at the computer, because when I had that job at the computer repair shop, they had a copy of Photoshop. It was one of the first versions. And so I remember taking that home and installing it. And I've always just messed around with Photoshop. Like, I would take pictures and insert myself into them or something, like old historic photos, and put myself in them, or, so I'd always mess around like that and try to make like funny pictures just for fun. And I did that in college, while I was dabbling with photography, but it was just for fun. Like, I would spend hours on some picture, took some friends, family photo, cheesy family photo, and put myself into it. And we told everyone that we were actually related or whatever, just did crazy stuff like that. And not just silly stuff. And that was probably my quote unquote personal work. I didn't have something that I was really interested in, where I was like, hey, I'm photographing this story or this, or, athletes or whatever. I just, at the time, was just having fun making money and taking pictures and goofing off kind of thing, so.
Well, it's interesting that even though, like you said, it wasn't necessarily a traditional type of personal project, the work that you found yourself doing still had a comedic or humorous element to it, which is clearly evident in the work that you have now. So it sounds like you have enjoyed comedy or humor, from an early age. Were there particular movies or comedians, or were you even into stand-up or anything like that as a kid?
Well, I wasn't allowed to be,
of course,
because I was allowed to listen to Christian comedians or something. I do remember, though, that's the funny thing, is it's very strange to me sometimes, the stuff I was able to watch, because I'll make a comment I wasn't allowed to listen to comedy, but then I watched Monty Python and the Holy Grail all the time. That was like that was kind of everything for me. And yeah, as I got a little older, I was able to see, you know, but there's a lot of movies from my childhood that I still have not seen. So, you know, what I had to choose from was quite limited, but you know, I remember getting a hold of like a Jerky Boys CD at one point, which is like these guys who just made like prank phone calls basically and had all these different characters. And I loved it. I mean, anything I could get my hands on, you know, I just kind of devoured it, but it was limited. So I don't have this like array of like inspiration that, you know, some people may have from their childhood.
Yeah, no, that's all good. And the fact that you pointed out Monty Python like that, that says a lot. Like, okay, I'm seeing where, you know, some of the seeds were planted. So that's amazing. And so moving forward just a little bit, now that you've graduated from college and you've got a thriving wedding business, or at least you're getting quite a few gigs doing weddings and things of that nature. When did you start to, I guess, see traction in the business to the point where it was just like, I am legit a photographer. Like, this is who I am. This is what I do. Like, when did you really start getting traction?
I mean, I considered myself a photographer the whole time. You know, I never really like, it wasn't like, I ever doubted that. I mean, I think in the beginning, that transition where I did tell people I was going to get a job kind of thing, I don't think I wanted to get a job, but I don't think it took long for me to see like this seemed pretty viable and it just kept going. And so I didn't try to stop it, you know? So it was just, but it was really this kind of, it just kind of happened. It just, you know, I worked hard. Like there was a lot of things that just kind of happened in my favor as well. Like right time, right place. And, you know, I've had conversations recently where I think like, if I was in college today, I really don't think that I would be able to do what I did back then. I mean, there weren't a lot of people doing it was part of it. So even though I wasn't that good, you know, I certainly had friends telling me I was, but I mean, I can look back and say like, I was probably worse than most photographers, you know, like you take most photographers today, if they pick up a camera, within 2 years, what they're doing is like far and beyond better than what I was doing after probably even 4 or 5 years of, you know, wow, with the camera. So I think it was just different time is part of it as well. But
yeah, it sounds like you got in on the ground floor and you had that first mover's advantage, I think is what they call it.
Yeah, definitely rode the wave. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I know that you're in Seattle, correct? Is that's where you're based, right?
Yep.
And so when did you start to move from California and continue to pursue this even further? Like, how did you even end up in Seattle?
Well, I was in Seattle the whole time. Cause I'd gone up to Seattle for college. And so that's where I first picked up a camera. I mean, aside from high school photography class. So I was already at school up in Seattle and I had moved up to Seattle to become famous playing bass in a band and to become a millionaire working at Microsoft. Those were my two goals. So that's how I chose Seattle. And I moved to Seattle just sight unseen. It was like, I'd never been there. And I just was like, that's where I'm going. So I had some great friends in college. It was a wonderful time. And I just never really considered leaving. It just kind of stayed there. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So one of the things that you're quite known for is, you know, you're just striking celebrity portraits, right? How did you even, I guess, get your first celebrity? Was it a publication that you were working for, or like, how did that even come about?
I mean, I think again, right place, right time. Like I had just, I mean, just to give a little bit of backstory, like I had been doing, you know, weddings and, you know, small business kind of stuff and some small editorial, but like mostly just like college or local kind of things. And I had started to notice like editorial photography, like on a national level, like I had seen people like Chris Buck or Peter Yang creating these portraits of celebrities, you know, when there was humor to them. It wasn't like they weren't just taking a picture. They were creating a picture, you know, they're creating a story through, I didn't know how they were doing it, but it was like, it was almost like they were messing with the viewer, you know, and that was really intriguing to me. And so I started becoming really interested in that type of photography, but it was so different. Like who even hires you for this? How do you get hired? Like how, you know, it was like starting over in a lot of ways. And so I started kind of working down that road as best as I could. I didn't really have a lot of information, but I was like trying to figure that out. And I was terrified, but I knew I probably needed to reach out to some of the local magazines like Seattle Magazine or Seattle Business Monthly or Seattle Met. And so one day, like I honestly, it was almost like I blacked out. Like I was in a trance. Cause I think it sounds silly, but like, I really was just like one of these moments where I was not aware of what my body was doing or I would have stopped it. I found myself on the phone. I had called, I don't remember if I called Seattle Magazine or Seattle. I called maybe both. I don't know. I called one of the local magazines and they gave me the email address for the art director. And so I wrote both art directors, and one of them gave me like a assignment, like on the spot. I couldn't believe it. And which has never happened in my life other than that one time. And it didn't go well, but I had the shot, and I felt like that gave me like a taste of like a little bit of what it is like. And so then I lined up a meeting with the art director at the other magazine, the other local magazine. And he was maybe a little older than me, but we're about the same age, and he had just started. And I don't know what it was. I think we just connected. I mean, I had been doing some, I mean, to be fair, I had been shooting some personal portraits on my own that were like I was trying to like create in the style that I had seen, you know, in these magazines. So it's not like I didn't have something to show. I always look back and like judge myself harshly, but I think at the time it must've been enough. He was intrigued. So he started hiring me to do like these profiles of, you know, local business people and creators and things like that. And, you know, we worked a lot together. I had like several assignments every month and it was awesome. And then they started doing this celebrity column where like some celebrity would pass through Seattle and they're, you know, give a lecture or have a show or whatever, or book release or something. And so they started hiring me to do the celebrity column, and like, you know, I had nothing to show for it, but that's how I got started, you know? And it was like, just one of those opportunities where like, how would this happen, you know, if not in right place, right time. And so that's how I got started. And I just basically took, as soon as I got that first celebrity portrait, I tried to turn it into the next one. And
of course
there was some kind of crazy stories along the way of how some of them came up, but it was a lot of kind of willing it to happen and putting it out there that I wanted it to happen and positive thinking and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, just you try to turn one into the next one and then the next one into the next one. And that's just kind of how it went. So.
Yeah, well, it looks like it's been working out quite well for you. So yeah, that's amazing. And I for anybody that's listening right now, yeah, we're in a different time than what you were. You know, you had to pick up the phone and make some calls, and people were generous enough to give you the art director's email and that kind of a thing. But the underlying energy behind it of going out and making the things happen, because they're not going to come to you, right? They're not going to just come knocking down your door. You got to put yourself in front of where you want to be as much as possible in order to see the, you know, the outcome that you want to see. And it sounds like you definitely like live that way. And I think that's, you know, that's pretty dope. That's pretty dope. I love hearing those stories. And so I did want to ask you one question about this is not even necessarily a celebrity. I guess in our world, she's a celebrity, but I saw this portrait and I'm like, I got to ask him what it was like photographing Annie Leibovitz. I don't even think I could bring myself to do it because I'd just be like, man, she's going to be judging the crap out of me. She's going to be like, what is this kid doing? Like, how did you even, you know, deal with those nerves, or were there nerves at all? Like, what was that
experience? Oh my gosh, there was that. Absolutely. I mean, I was photographing for that celebrity column I was telling you about. I had photographed John Waters, who he wrote Hairspray.
Yeah.
And I'm portraited with him, and And he was just phenomenal. He was so fun to work with. And after the shoot, he hung out and was just kind of talking with us. He was gossiping about other celebrities and just telling us some hilarious stories about other celebrities. And his publicist was there, and, you know, I don't know that she was name dropping, but somehow it came up and she told me that she was working on a book project with Annie Leibovitz. And I just blurted out, I would love to photograph Annie Leibovitz. And she kind of laughed and was like, oh, that would be cool, wouldn't it? But I don't think she really sits for portraits or anything like that. And that was it. I think she just told me because she thought I'd get a kick out of it because I was a photographer. And so that was that. And then maybe 3 or 4 months later, I got an email from the publicist who I was talking to with John Waters. And she said, the email just basically said, would you be interested in photographing Annie Leibovitz? And I said, yes, I'm still very much interested. And then they said, could you send in a portfolio to her studio? And, you know, and I, so I did, and I don't know who looked at it, but I sent it in, and then I got an email back like a week later, and it said that Annie would be happy to sit for you. And that was that. And so then I got the email from the magazine, and I said, I actually haven't told this story in a while. So I'm like remembering details I haven't thought about in a while, but I went through these phases of preparing for that shoot. Like my first and probably, and definitely my worst idea was phase one, where I was like, I'm going to make, and cause I did not have like a style. Well, I suppose I did, but like, it was very much like, I'm still trying to find myself. But back then I was like, definitely really trying to find myself. And so my first idea was like, I'm going to make this look like an Annie Leibovitz picture, you know, like I'm going to have her on top of a horse on the roof of the hotel, you know, with the wind blowing and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, like, I don't know what thankfully allowed me to see clearly that that was a terrible idea, but thankfully I had the clarity at some point. I was like, what are you doing? Like, why would you do this? And so then I moved on to, I don't even remember what phase two was, but some other idea that I was trying to think. And then thankfully I had done enough celebrities at that point to realize what usually happens, which is you don't get this amazing location, or, you know, you don't get them to wear typically what you want them to wear. Like you're sitting in a hotel, you know, in some room. And for me, I mean, some people can take a hotel room and make it look interesting, but I only want to talk about what I'm interested in talking about, or I only want to show what I'm interested in showing. And so if it doesn't add anything, I would very much rather look at a picture and wonder about the things that aren't literally like handed to me than be given everything and just be like, oh, I guess I know everything and move on kind of thing. So I just had this realization of like, look, this is going to be at a hotel. There's going to be like 10 minutes, best case scenario. Just try to get one great iconic portrait. Like, then that's always my goal, is like, try to get one great, like make this the best portrait that's ever been taken of this person kind of thing. And so I tried to live into that, and I just decided to simplify and just make it a studio portrait. Like just take a seamless and try to set up, you know, have some ideas for what it's going to look like kind of thing, but just don't fight the situation and just go with what you're given kind of thing. And that was probably the first time I really lived into that. And that was definitely something that has stuck with me more than a lot of things I've learned, because I still operate that way to a large extent. So it was indeed at a hotel, and she was giving a lecture and around her book release and everything. And so we got there, and we had like the suite or the penthouse or whatever at the hotel. And I think we were given like an hour or hour and a half to set up. And then, you know, they said we'd have, I don't remember exactly. I think they said like half an hour for the interview, which I wasn't doing, but the interview and the photo. And so we got set up and I got everything dialed in, and I was definitely nervous. And then someone got a call and they said, Annie is running late. She's going to be like 45 minutes late. And I instantly thought I was going to throw up. Like I was like, my nerves just hit me, because I was ready to go. I had kept myself occupied with lighting and everything. And then now I'm just like sitting there thinking about it. And it was rough. And so I walked out into the hallway and I had to like pace around and try to talk some sense into myself and just gain my composure. And then I got another call that said, when she arrives, could she do the interview first? Which meant it was going to be like another hour at least or something. And so I don't know how I got through that hour. I didn't throw up, but I was definitely like, I was a ball of nerves. And so eventually she showed up and she walked in, and she was very kind and gracious. And I had just bought my first digital Hasselblad, and I guess she hadn't used one yet, because she was really interested in the camera. She's like, oh, wow. And she was asking me about it and asked if she could hold it. And oh, wow. She was like looking at it, and we were talking about that. And then we started talking about cameras. And I think the publicist or someone was like, let's get going. Like, come on, you got to go. And I realized like, we've been talking for like 5 minutes and probably, you know, used half my time there. And so I had this, like, I had just bought for this shoot. I don't normally like to talk about gear, but I, for this one specifically, I remember, and it kind of is part of the story, I had bought this beauty dish with a grid in it. And so it was a very specific, like light, you know, that it's very kind of technical, like it's not very forgiving. And so I had this specific pose that I wanted for her, and she had to sit just this right way and everything. And so she sat in and she was just really nervous, like really, really nervous. And I kept trying to like get her where I wanted her. And she just kept like, she was very antsy and fidgety. And then she's like, is there something I could, you know, put my hands on? Like, and I realized in hindsight, like, she, you know, she was uncomfortable. And, you know, when you're uncomfortable, like if you have something between you and someone else, like it would be the same thing as if you and I were sitting and talking, we were both just like sitting in chairs facing each other. Like if you put a table between two people, there's something very calming about that. But if you have two people just facing each other, especially with a camera in the middle, like that's an intimidating thing for anyone. Even if, you know, they're used to photography, not necessarily on that side, you know? So she was wanting to like kind of put her hands up and like have a table. So we did get this little like corner table that she was like leaning on, and she kept putting her hands up and like creating these shadows on her face, which I think could be interesting, but I just wasn't set up for that. And the shadows were too dark and it was like covering her eyes and stuff. And so I was getting nervous because I'm like, she's not listening to me. What do I do? And eventually I just spoke up and I said, you know, I love what you're doing. I think this is really interesting, but the shadows are too heavy. I wonder if there's some way to like bring it closer. And then she just gave me this thing where she just put her hand up over her face. And there was just like one picture like that. And I got it. And then she said like, oh my gosh, John, this is so difficult. And she buried her face in both of her hands and leaned forward. And I got this other picture, which I've shown maybe once or twice. It's one of my favorite pictures. It's so vulnerable.
It's on your Instagram, right? I think
I did post it maybe at some point. Yeah. And so anyway, there's, you know, I got several pictures, but those two were it for me. And I think they're probably, you know, probably some of the best pictures I've ever taken. And I would say she was also, for as nervous as she was by far one of the most collaborative subjects I've ever had. I mean, especially considering how uncomfortable she seemed. I will always be grateful for what she put into that. She clearly had an understanding of like what it takes when she has a camera in her hand to really get a great picture. It takes collaboration. And that's not something I have always understood or even lived into, but it's such a gift when the person you're photographing can give you something raw or vulnerable or whatever it is that they give you. You know, that was a gift that I'll always be grateful for. And so, you know, yeah, I was very nervous and I think she was nervous too, but I think I talked to her afterwards after the shoot, even I remember asking her about if she ever got nervous because it was an easier question once the shoot was done. And I'm sure maybe my nerves showed as well, but she was very, very gracious and said that she did get nervous around people that she admired, you know, when she was photographing them kind of thing. And so that gave me a lot of like confidence and like, okay, I'm not like, it's not like I can't handle this, right? Like it's not just me that's, you know, falling apart here. So anyway, that's probably a longer
story. That was exactly what that you couldn't have answered it any better. That was perfect. And I think it shows the humanity of all of us, even the people that are, you know, that we might consider to be on another level. At the end of the day, they're a human being with a brain, a heart and nerves and everything else that makes us human. And that makes us susceptible to the things that humans find ourselves, you know, worried about. And that actually makes me think, and I've got a couple more questions and I'll let you go. It looks like we're already at time, but how or have you ever dealt with imposter syndrome? Like, have you ever found yourself in a situation where you're like, wow, what the heck am I doing here? And will they find me out? Will they call me out for not actually, you know, being the photographer that I claim to be?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I've thought about it like in that sense, if I've felt like an imposter, but I've definitely feel like I'm not good enough. I guess that is the same kind of thing. Yeah. I don't know that I've had like that phrasing, but yeah, I mean, I constantly struggle with not being good enough or, you know, was that a fluke? That one thing that I did that I like and other people seem to resonate with, like, was that an accident? You know? Yeah, that's definitely, I mean, I remember there's so many times, I mean, doing these interviews is always like a great trigger for that kind of feeling, because I'll come on here and I'll sound like I've got it all together and make some statements about the way it is or whatever. And then 2 weeks later, it's like that thing that I said, you know, comes back and hits me in the face or whatever. So yeah, I mean, it's in the same way that she told me she still gets nervous around people she respects. I mean, it's a difficult job and there's a lot of closed doors and there's a lot of just pushing ahead because you believe in yourself or what you're doing, or hopefully both, and not letting, you know, the rejection stop you. And honestly, a lot of times the rejection isn't personal. It's hard to not take it personal, but it's rarely personal. It's often situational or circumstantial. You know, when you think about, you know, the number of opportunities that exist out there and the number of people that are trying to get those opportunities, it's not great odds. You know, I remember an interview from a friend of mine who has been a longtime mentor of mine. And one of my favorite photographers is Chris Buck, who I remember an interview that I read with him maybe before we even met, but he was being interviewed by, I think, like a photo editor at, I don't remember which magazine it was, but it's some magazine anyway, the interviewer said, like, you know, you've been one of my favorite photographers for the last 10 years. And Chris was like, and oddly, you've never hired me, you know, kind of thing. And that stuck with me. And, you know, he was joking around, but I mean, the reality was he never really did hire him. And it doesn't mean that he wasn't his favorite photographer. It just means that, like, a lot of times, especially if we're talking about like client work, people might get to hire a photographer like once or twice a year, sometimes maybe for magazines more often, but you know, when they do, they're not just trying to like help out a friend. They're trying to make the best product they can. And they're looking for the artist that can do whatever that story happens to be justice. And sometimes it's based on location. Sometimes it's based on style. Sometimes it's based on both. But, you know, you're not going to get all of them. And that's no matter who you are. And so that can be hard, especially for someone that believes in themselves. And, you know, especially if you're in a stretch where you haven't had a job in a while, like it's rough. There's a lot of beatdown. So yes, to answer your question, have I ever felt imposter syndrome? I constantly struggle with not feeling like I'm good enough or know what I'm doing or, you know, whatever. It's something that maybe it's just me, but I think probably something we all struggle with in our own ways.
Of course. Of course. And I love that framing that you gave of, you know, putting it in the perspective of there are, you know, a finite amount of jobs and opportunities and almost an infinite amount of photographers and creatives out there. And so, yeah, it's not personal. And it reminds me of something a couple of my actor friends have told me over the years in regards to, you know, being an actor is basically it's essentially being told no way more than people are used to. And, you know, being able to understand that, okay, yeah, maybe I did the best that I could, but it still wasn't right for the particular role or, like you said, all those myriad other factors, right? And so going into it, knowing that all you can do is your best and then hoping that it's the right opportunity. And ultimately, it's a numbers game. The more people you can get yourself in front of, the, you know, the higher the chances are that you'll find work. I guess that's basically in any profession where you're selling something, whether that be a service or a product or whatever. And, you know, I love the way that you frame that.
I saw a beautiful video this morning of Tiffany Haddish like live on, I didn't realize she had a show. I don't know what it was actually, but she was live on, I think on her show, and her producer told her like live in her ear that she had won a Grammy for best comedy album. And, you know, she had these two girls with her and she was telling them just like how hard, you know, it is, how many closed doors there are. And I think it's easy for people to look at anyone, not just celebrity, but anyone that's achieved some sort of success, especially if that success has been in like the arts or in the public eye, whether it's a movie or a commercial or a photo shoot or whatever it is, people see that and they think, oh my gosh, it's so impressive or whatever. But even on like the biggest levels, there's definitely situations where a celebrity can hit, you know, someone can hit this stretch where they're hot for, you know, a year or two or whatever, but no matter who you are, like your best year, you're making maybe two, maybe three movies at the most. Probably one if you're lucky, you know, and it's the same for any arts. Like, you know, bands aren't putting out albums every year, you know, even if take money aside, because even if you're fortunate enough to make a lot of money and you're fine, like you want to create, that's what you got in to do this. And if you're an actor and you're making like one movie a year, like what are you doing the other 9 months? Like that's a lot of time to sit and think and wonder if you're good enough, right? Like that's what being a freelance artist is all about, is managing the downtime. And either like living into it and living it well, and then hitting it hard when you get those opportunities and also making those opportunities, or otherwise that downtime is just going to kill you. You know, it's going to be preventative to doing the thing you love. So it's part of the deal, I think, you know, but it's worth fighting. It's worth fighting through, I believe, because what we get to do is so thrilling, at least for me.
That's amazing. And again, just the framing of it and the perspective, I think, is something that for people out there who are listening and might be struggling with this idea, I think that that's one way to look at it to help people press on. And my last question, and I'll let you go. A few months ago, had a conversation with Maren Levinson from Red Eye, your agency.
Love Maren, yeah.
Yeah, she's amazing. Love her too. And she said something that it makes perfect sense. And it's something that when I look at your work, it definitely applies. She said that when she's editing work with a photographer, she has them look at the image and then she asks, can anybody else make this image? Right? Like, that's a question that she loves to ask. And when I look at your work, I can tell, like, oh, shoot, that's John Keatley all the way right there, because you just the way that you, whether it's the lighting or the expressions or the post-processing, it's clear that you have a style, whether you're shooting portraits or fine art, that I couldn't shoot it like that. Like, there's no way I'd be able to tell the stories in the way that you tell the stories. And my question is, how did you come upon that style? How long did it even take you to reach the point? And earlier you said you're still trying to figure yourself out, but clearly you figured some stuff out along the way and you've been able to infuse your work with it. So how did that come about, or what was that process like, and how long did it take?
I mean, like I said, it's definitely ongoing, but I wouldn't even know how to like try to pretend to know how many years, but I mean, it's been many years in the making. I think for me, a big part of that process when I really started to kind of dig deep was when I started seeing a therapist, getting to like unpack, you know, who I am and where I've come from and the good and the bad, you know, understand that part of me. And then, you know, I taught a workshop for a few years, and part of kind of teaching that workshop forced me to also like kind of break down my own process so I could teach it. And part of that was like really analyzing my work in ways that I hadn't done before, whether it's like blurring everything and just simply looking at it from a color perspective, or looking at everything from like a subject matter, just like trying to look at all my work collectively and try to like map out the similarities and then try to understand like, why am I drawn to this or that color, or what is it about this? And in some cases, like what's missing, like, what do I really, you know, what, or if I gather my inspiration that other people have created, like what are the similarities in these images that I'm clearly drawn to right now? And so I think it was just like a lot of analysis and trying to understand, you know, who I am. And that's something that I think like, I'm still constantly, probably one of the hardest things to do is like write out an artist statement or like just some sort of like clear, concise message of who I am or what my work represents. And I think, especially for me, because I'm a very curious person, I think what I do is very similar over and over again, but in my head, I'm trying to explore so many different things, and like merging the two is what I struggle with. But, and also giving yourself room for growth, right? Like who I was 10 years ago is not who I am now. And so like, I don't want to create some sort of artist statement, so to speak, that I'm going to force myself to live by for the rest of my life. Right. Like it's gotta be like a living, breathing document that can adjust as you adjust. But at the same time, like there are things that I know, like that's just not for me. Right. Like I've grown, but that doesn't mean that I'm interested in this or this makes sense for me, you know, like, so it's kind of like an awareness and studying of, you know, whatever you can kind of wrap your mind around. But then there's also some of it that's a subconscious too. Like there's been times where I've tried to apply like a certain look to an image, like a color grade or something. And it's like, I love the idea of it, or I love it in this other person's work. And then when it comes down to it, it's like, no, I can't do that. Like, it's just like, you know, it's like putting on a shirt that's a color that you hate. I don't care how good it looks on the model or how good it looks, you know, in the store. Like when you wake up and it's time to get dressed, like you might put it on, but at the minute you look in the mirror, you're like, yeah, no, like it's got to come off. Right. Like, and that's just kind of, I think understanding yourself or being honest with yourself, not being willing to lie to yourself is important, because then it's just like, you know, if you eat something and you don't like it, there's never any confusion. No one ever goes, do I like this or not? I mean, maybe like some rare new taste you've never encountered, you may have to think for a minute, but like, you know what I mean? Like it's never a question. And I think you can do that creatively. Like the more you spend time doing something, the more you know who you are and what you like. And there's just no lying to yourself after a certain point. You're like, this is not, what am I doing? You know, like this isn't going to work. So it's just a lot of that. That being said, there's this project that I've been working on for a couple of years, and the pandemic kind of threw things off a little bit, but I'm just having the hardest time like figuring out where I want to go with it. And I've spent hundreds of hours like comping stuff up on the computer. And like, you know, there was actually this time I went down to LA and I went out to lunch with Maren, and I had these like three prints that I was like really excited about. I had spent like months and months putting these together, and I thought I'd finally figured it out. And I went to lunch with Maren, and she looked at him and she's like, "Oh, this isn't you." And I was just like, I was so angry, because I was like, this has to be me, Maren. Like, you don't know how much time I've put into this. But at the same time, I knew on this very deep level that she was right. And that's not to say that anyone that says something to you, I mean, like, you know, your parents might be like, "I don't like that" or whatever, but like, Maren is one of the few people, maybe one or two people, maybe one of three or four people who I could have that conversation with in there. And I know they're right. Like I know where they're coming from, and they know where I'm coming from, and I trust their opinion. And that was tough, because I just wanted to be done. And I just wanted to like use that equation and create the rest of it. And to hear that the equation was still like not even anywhere close was like, oh my gosh. And I'm still wrestling with that one. So, you know, even though you figure out who you are, maybe that's just me though. You know, I see some people's work, and it's like, I mean, this is the hard part about creativity, right? Like I could say like, "Hey, they're phoning that in," but it's like, you know, I don't know. That's judgmental. Like, what do I know about what their goal is? You know, I do think though, sometimes people, I don't know, this is a current pet peeve of mine, and I don't want to name any names. I could be totally off base here. Often, again, like I said before, I've made so many statements on this will be my statement on this podcast. I do it every time. I make some statement, and 3 months later, I'm like, "That was so off base. What were you thinking?" But I have to say things out loud to process them. But I see people constantly, they'll like come up with this formula that works really well. And it's like a lot of people now will do like, and this is kind of actually part of what my series is even, but it's like this big environment with a person in it, or a series of people in it. And to me, it all kind of goes back to like Greg Crudson. He was like one of the first people that I really saw that was like really doing this. And then like it became very popular, and a lot of people started building sets and putting people in these sets. But you know, it's like once you get that to work, it's a really interesting visual. It's really beautiful. And there's so much like mystery and intrigue that can be wrapped into that. And you can do so much with lighting and an interior set, like that kind of thing. But you know, it's like, okay, this is a story. Try not to be too literal here, but this is a story about hoarders, let's say. And it's like this series of hoarders in their environment. And then the next series is, this is a series of, you know, gun collectors. Like, and it's like, okay. Yeah. I mean, the people are like, yeah, but is that really a new series? Like, it's the same thing, you know, like, I don't know. And I guess you can make that argument. Like, I'm just making portraits. It's like, John, you're just doing people on Seamless the whole over and over again. In my mind, it's all very different, you know, but like, I don't know. How do we get onto this?
No, I love it. These are the tangents that I live for.
But is this, I'm trying, I actually don't even remember now if I'm still answering the question of like, how do you find your style? But you know, I guess for me, it's just like, I constantly wrestle with this stuff, and I constantly want to like, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. That's something that I constantly tell myself. And sometimes that holds me back. Maybe I overthink things sometimes too much. But there's just this part of me that like, I know what I want, and I know what I feel is good or what I can be proud of. And for me, that takes a lot of like thought, and it has to be meaningful. And I don't want it to be easy. I don't want it to be this like formula that I've come up with and I just like copy and paste and just change my subject. You know, like it's got to be different. Like, you know, for example, a uniform came off of me exploring this like concept of identity, where I photographed one person looking like seven different people. And then I photographed like 20 people all dressed as the same person. And it was a genuine exploration of identity. And I was just curious. And I was like trying to figure out, you know, what would happen if I did this kind of thing. And that led me to uniform. And when uniform hit, it was like this lightning bolt. Like it just made so much sense on so many levels. And, you know, I've had conversations with like art galleries and people, and they're like, you need to just paint people. Like, that should be your thing. Like, it's so good. Like, you should be doing like a pink series or something. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, I see people doing that, to be honest. And they're like, I paint people, or I do this or whatever. And it's like, I don't know. I'm not going to say that's wrong. Like, I just know that I can't do that. Like, I've got to, now that's not to say I won't take some elements from that somehow and, like, you know, grow it into something else. But I just have learned that I'm not the person that can, like, do that one thing and do it over and over again. Some of my favorite artists, that's what they do. Some of the art that I've collected personally, like, it, for some reason, it doesn't offend me as much when it comes to painting or illustration and things like that. But I find it really offensive in photography, and I don't know why that is. I'm clearly trying to unpack that right here live. But anyway, that's kind of, I guess all that to say, I wrestle with this stuff a lot. I think about it a lot. I try to create as much as I can. A lot of it I don't ever show, but I'm just constantly, you know, wrestling with it and asking those questions. And there to be genuine is hard to define, but I feel like I know what is genuine when I see it. And I know what I need. I know who I am and how, what I need to do if I want to be a genuine person. And that is really important to me. And so I just have to, like, wrestle with stuff until it feels genuine. And then I feel like, okay, this is it. But if I don't have that feeling, yeah, something's off, you know? And there's clearly some people in my life who also can sense that, because Marin is one of those people where she knows, she's like, you are trying to be someone else here, or I don't know what you're doing, but you lost track of who you are, kind of thing. And I'm really grateful for that input when I get it.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And again, I love it when people like that kind of just pop into our lives and help keep us on track and keep us on the right path. And one thing that you said that I want to briefly touch on is the idea of really getting to know yourself, really doing the self work. And like you said, even going to therapy, I feel like even for myself, I didn't really start to understand my perspective until I started to understand my perspective and start doing that self work and asking questions that I had been putting off for years and years and years and not trying to understand why I felt certain ways about certain things. So I think that is, like, one of the best places to at least start when it comes to finding and evolving your style or your artistic aesthetic, if you will. So, but John, man, this has been amazing. You have dropped some major knowledge, and I love hearing the way you work things out in your mind and the way you tell stories verbally and through your work. So thank you for taking the time, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you do next.
Thank you. I appreciate your interest and the opportunity to be on here with you.
All right. That was my chat with John, and man, you never really know what you're going to get when you're dealing with a PK or preacher's kid, as we used to call it in my hometown. But for real, though, he dropped a lot of really good information, a lot of inspiration, and a lot of motivation, because I really feel like the things that he said can apply to all of us, especially when dealing with doing the inner work to really learn about who you are as a person, and then doing that work and then finding a way to infuse your own artistic endeavors with that new information and knowledge. And as you can see, when you do it right, amazing things can happen. So if you enjoyed the show, as always, feel free to like and subscribe, comment, share with your friends on all the platforms. You can find us at What Makes You Click. And as always, I appreciate you guys for listening. I don't take it for granted that you have taken this time and spent it with me and my guests. So thank you for that. All right. We'll catch you on the next episode.